I couldn't hear a word they were saying. I took out my headphones. "Hello, officers," I said, smiling for some dumb reason. They looked at me as if I was completely daft. "You know you cannot sleep here, yeah? That is the Autobahn over there. You cannot sleep on the Autobahn." Well, we figured as much. "Oh, we can't?" Aaron asked innocently. This was something we did every time we were in situations like this. Just play dumb. "No, you cannot. Did you have any drugs?" Well, that escalated quickly. "No, sir. Can't stress that enough, sir." "Okay. You must leave now or we can arrest you, okay? You walk down further, maybe 4 kilometers, and you will find a gas station. You can find a ride from there." The damn gas station. "Okay." So we packed up and started walking, pretty much back in the same general direction from whence we had come. After an hour, Corey and I reached the gas station and looked back. Surprise, surprise, Aaron was bent over, resting far behind us. "He is going to have to figure out something with that pack," Corey commented. But, spoiler alert, he never did. One huge oversight we had made during the packing phase of our preparation was the negligence to leave space for carrying food. Because of this, we were forced to carry all of our food in grocery bags. Since Aaron had the lightest pack, he was delegated to carry these bags. That didn't stop him, of course, from pawning off as many items as possible to Corey and me. "We all use the stuff," he would say. That was a good argument, but at the same time, here I was carrying the guitar and all of my computer equipment, and Corey carrying the cajon and all of the extra camping equipment, which benefited all of us as well. His argument was as fallacious as could be. But when I told this to Aaron, both the definition of a fallacy and the core concept of splitting up labor were both lost on him. Sticks in the wind, much like the idea of pulling our money together. So, alas, I was forced to carry heavy bags of rice or extra water on top of my already heavier pack, while Aaron's grocery bags would be lighted to less than 10 pounds. Oh well. Step, step, step. Johannes's method of hitchhiking didn't go well at all. We stood in front of that gas station for 6 hours, asking just about everyone who walked by. No one wanted to give us a ride. We met a couple of girls in their early 20s who were also hitchhiking. They were walking around and asking everyone in German for rides. If they aren't getting rides, then we stand no chance, I thought. After a while, we were all pretty disheartened. We sat along a wall next to the restrooms with a little sign set up in front of us. Since the girls would surely get a ride before we did, we kind of gave up for the time being. I wrote in my journal, played guitar, and smoked probably 100 cigarettes out of boredom. It was during the lattermost of these activities that a comically small police car sped up and skidded to a stop in front of us. Out jumped 2 officers who promptly walked over to me and took the cigarette right out of my mouth, throwing it on the ground and stomping it out. "Passports!" one of them demanded. They didn't look like they were here to fuck around. Physically fit, tactical vests, and all the glory of their peak in high school long behind them. "Okay, give us a second to get them," one of us said. "You have drugs, no?" "No," Aaron replied quickly. "No drugs." "You have drugs. Marijuana?" "No drugs." They looked directly at Corey this time. His long hair, bandana, and a huge beard were not working in his favor. It was posed as a statement rather than a question when they moved on to him. "You do drugs." "No, sir." He quickly shook his head back and forth. "You have marijuana?" one of them asked. "Nope." "Have you ever smoked marijuana or tried any drugs?" "Nope, never once in my life, sir." Aaron spoke up again. "You can search our bags, man. We don't have anything." They finally relented and handed us back our passports. "You don't smoke here. Go away from the gas station for that." They got back in their car, but slowly drove in circles around the gas station. After a while, a nice Lexus SUV pulled in next to us. They screeched to a halt behind it as a skinny, short guy with a buzz cut stepped out. They spoke in German, so I wasn't sure exactly what was being said, but it looked apparent that he was going through the same shit we had just endured. The next thing I knew, they were searching through his vehicle and assumedly asking him whether or not he possessed drugs currently or had ever done drugs. He was cleared eventually, and they got in their car to leave. As the man was walking into the gas station, he dropped his ID, and Aaron ran over and grabbed it. "Hey, bro, you dropped your card here."
"Ah, thank you, man," the guy replied.
"Hey, where are you headed?"
"I'm going south to Switzerland."
"You think we could, catch a ride?"
"We're trying to make it as far south as we can, and, well, we haven't had any luck getting a ride so far."
He looked at us and pondered for a second, and then he shrugged.
"Ah, sure, why not?"
He turned around and opened up the hatch to his SUV so we could load our bags in while he went into the store. He came back out right as we were getting into the car and hopped in the driver's seat.
"I'm Alex," he introduced himself. We did the same.
"Is that normal for police to do that?" I asked as I sat in the front passenger seat.
"Yeah, man," he replied as he slipped on a pair of Oakley sunglasses and put the car in reverse. "That is how they try to solve the drug problem here in Germany. They just ask if you have ever done drugs, and if you're stupid enough to tell them yes, they can arrest you."
"So, if I tell them I smoked a joint 5 years ago, they can arrest me?"
"Yes, that is the admission of a crime to them."
"That is insane," I commented in disbelief.
"Ah, yes, but it's pretty much useless for actually finding drugs or marijuana, so for me it's no bother," he continued. "I have this in my pocket the whole time." He held up a big blunt. "You guys smoke?"
"We do," Corey quickly spoke up from the back. "I don't really smoke much anymore. It started giving me serious anxiety, and since you can't just go to a store and choose different strains in Ohio, I just stopped smoking altogether. I'll always support marijuana legalization 100%, but these days I'd just rather have a beer. I digress."
Alex lit up the blunt as we sped down the highway. He said he was a booking agent for a living. He explained to us that he had just left the police station because of an altercation he had gotten into earlier that day. Apparently, he had booked an act at a local club, and the manager had canceled at the last minute. He wanted his deposit back and had attempted to actually kidnap Alex and ransom the money. Seriously. The manager had asked him to meet up so they could quote-unquote talk, and the next thing he knew, his vehicle was blocked in and a bunch of big Armenians were there with the club owner. They were trying to throw him into a trunk to take him back to some other country I can't remember the name of, but luckily they were stopped by a rather large guy that Alex happened to have with him at the time. He jumped back into his car and called the police, which fortunately was enough to make the would-be kidnappers flee. I was a little wary believing the story at that point. All that for what, probably a 500 euro deposit? His cell phone rang.
"Yeah."
"No, man. No, fuck you, okay? You going to pull some shit like that on me? I can pull some shit, too. I already talked to my lawyers, bro. I was going to give you the 50,000 back and just be done with your stupid ass. But that's not happening now. You signed a fucking contract."
Did he just say 50,000? 50,000 euros? He hung up the phone angrily.
"See, this fucking asshole, man. He read them some shit on the tabloid that Akon is canceling his European tour or something. I told that stupid fuck it was bullshit. He believes that shit over me."
"Wait, who do you do booking for, man?" Corey asked from the back seat, noticeably intrigued.
"A bunch of people, man. Hip-hop artists, mainly. Akon, 50 Cent, Lil Kim, Wu-Tang Clan. I did Snoop Dogg and Dre back in the 90s.
"Dude, that's awesome." I was still somewhat skeptical of whether he was telling the truth or not.
"Yeah, so this asshole paid his deposit, and now he canceled the show and wants his money back. That's why he tried to take me and shit, to make me pay."
50,000 euros is the deposit?" I asked.
"Yeah, with Akon, they pay 50% up front, and then the other 50% at the performance, plus all the royalties and incidentals and shit."
"What does that mean?"
"Here, you can look through his contract and rider if you want. The shit they ask for can get crazy, man."
He handed me a stack of papers. I started flipping through them. The first couple pages were the details of the show, when and where it was, how much, which was 100,000 euros, and all of that. There was a huge list of food and drink requests on the third or fourth page. One case of Fiji water, chilled.
1 case of Fiji water room temperature, 4 Pizza Hut pizzas, 1 pepperoni and cheese, etc., 3 buckets of KFC chicken, etc., 4 Snickers bars, 1 bottle of Cristal for Akon's dressing room, 1 bottle of Cristal for the band dressing room. It went on and on like that, then moved on to furniture. Akon's dressing room, 1 black couch, 1 black love seat, 1 black coffee table with glass top. It continued with first class airfare, limos, just about anything you can imagine. They would usually pay like 100,000 euros for the shows and another 50 or 100,000 a show for shit like that. And man, the acts don't even touch half of that shit, he told us. Such a fucking waste sometimes. Wait, is it like someone's job to go buy all this shit? Oh yeah, man. I used to work with Mariah Carey. That bitch was crazy. She had to have an all-white dressing room with all-white furniture and 4 white puppies in it. 4 white puppies? Aaron chimed in from the back. 4 fucking white puppies, bro, he confirmed. That is outlandish, I commented. Around this time, he mentioned the name of his business, which I won't repeat in order to protect him from any liabilities associated with repeating some of the stuff I already have, and I decided to look it up on my phone. I was still pretty skeptical. But sure as shit, there he was. His picture and everything, along with a lot of the aforementioned clients. European tour booking manager. This guy's for real. Hey, do you guys have somewhere to stay tonight? He asked. No, man, like wherever we can find, really, Corey answered. Well, if my wife is cool, I'll let you stay at my house tonight, and then I'll drive you a little further tomorrow. Hell yeah, man, that would be fantastic. He got out his phone and spoke in German for a few moments. Let's just say you don't need to know German to understand the universal language of a husband trying in vain to reason with his wife. Yeah, that's not happening. Apparently his wife thought there was something sketchy about bringing 3 foreign hitchhikers with big beards back to their house. I still don't get that one. Well, I'll tell you what, guys. I know of a little park a few miles away from my house. I can drop you off there to sleep tonight, and then I'll pick you up tomorrow and run you back to the highway. How's that? Hell yeah, man, that sounds good, Corey answered quickly. Upon arrival at said park, I got Alex's number and saved it in my phone. He told us he'd return sometime in the afternoon the next day to pick us up, and then he got back in his SUV and headed down the road. The park was a great spot. It was nestled between big stone retaining walls and bordering a small river littered with strange-looking little orange and brown ducks. We slept in our hammocks that night after our nightly dinner of rice and tuna, this time with some watermelon for dessert that we'd bought from a market up the street. One thing we learned that day was that the gas station method of hitchhiking just wasn't going to work for us. Tomorrow we would go back to the on-ramp method we'd had so much luck with before Heidelberg. The only question was whether or not Alex would actually come back to get us. He had driven us relatively far into this town, and we didn't really have much of a clue how to make it back to the highway. We knew the general direction it was in, but that was about it. I fell asleep hoping he would keep his promise. End of chapter 12. Chapter 13. Kings of the Road. Hitchhikers Extraordinaire. Basel, Switzerland to Milano, Italy. The day started disappointingly, with no answer from any of my phone calls to Alex. We waited until sometime in the afternoon before leaving. The problem, as mentioned previously, was that we still didn't really have any idea where we were. We knew only to walk back in the general direction we had ridden in from and hope we'd see an on-ramp. We shouldered our packs and started to walk out of town towards our best idea of the right direction. We made it about 10 minutes before being hammered with rain. I suggested we stop and hitch under a little bridge that the road passed through, but Aaron wanted to keep walking further out of town. But it's raining, man, Corey stated the obvious. Yeah, but I think we'll just have better luck over there, he pointed. There was about 100 feet farther down the road. Whatever. Aaron had begun to act rather bossy at this point. This was causing a bit of a rift in the group. Part of the problem is that I tend to do the same thing at times. I have a leadership personality type, and he had many of the same traits. We naturally butted heads. The real problem was that while he had the assertiveness of a leader, he frequently lacked the navigational ability to lead in the right direction. Some of the shit he would say was just baffling to Corey and me. For example, choosing to stand out in the pouring rain rather than taking shelter a mere 100 feet away. His recent habit of barking out orders without the know-how to back them up or respect from Corey and me to follow them had led us to secretly nickname him the Lieutenant. Having stood on the shoulder of the road for a good while with no luck getting a ride, the rain finally let up. We decided to keep moving, if only it were that simple. Let's just walk farther down and jump onto the highway there. I bet there'll be a gas station or something eventually, Aaron suggested. A busy highway ran perpendicular to the road we were on, crossing underneath a bridge ahead. We can't even really see where this goes, though, I argued. Plus, there's not really anywhere to walk along the side of it. It'd be super dangerous, man. There was a large barrier next to the highway, which left about 5 feet between it and the traffic that would be speeding by. Not much walking room. What if we just walked back to the first road in town and walked along that to an on-ramp? It was an argument I'll spare you the details of, because it went on for a while before Aaron finally just turned and began walking down the road. Corey and I continued to protest as we followed behind. The traffic was terrifyingly close to us. People were honking as they passed, probably telling us to get the hell off the side of the highway. We walked for almost a mile like this before finally reaching an exit with a rest stop. "See, told you guys," Aaron stated upon arrival at the rest stop. "Aaron, you just completely fucking guessed and led us down a highway where we almost got slammed by trucks every 5 seconds. You didn't tell us shit. This is why we vote on things. You're not the dictator." "Well, it's always you guys versus me when we vote on this shit." "Nah, man," Corey spoke up. "I tend to agree with Tom more, I'll give you that, but I side with you on some stuff, too." I snapped. "He agrees with me most of the time because your ideas are fucking stupid, Aaron." It was out of line for me to say that, but I was pissed. I felt like we had completely unnecessarily risked our lives on the predicate of a complete guess. If you haven't already ascertained, tensions were growing between Aaron and me by the day. If we weren't arguing about this kind of stuff, we were arguing about money. That is why he had first started to act like he was the omnipotent leader of our group. Ever since he had demonstrated that he was in control of the cash, he had turned everything into his decision. We were almost always bickering about money. Every time we went to the supermarket for food, it was a huge deal what we were buying and how much. If we were hungry throughout the day, it didn't matter. We just went hungry until the next communal meal. A hostel or hotel was out of the question. If we absolutely had to get fast food for lack of options, we would get a single cheeseburger and cut it into thirds and split a medium fry. We felt as though we had to ask permission for even the smallest expenditure. I will admit that his being there likely saved us financially. We would have blown through our money in no time if Corey and I had been left to our own devices. Probably within the first month, actually. Do I think we would have figured it out and still made it? Definitely. I also think that the extent that Aaron tried to save money, as well as his ideologies on money in general, were absurd and borderline fanatical. It was true that Corey and I needed someone to balance out our spending tendencies, but not anywhere near the extent that he took it. Anyway, we walked over to the gas station at the rest stop and sat along a wall. I went into the restroom and filled up all of our water bottles in the sink while Corey and Aaron waited outside. When I came back out and sat down, Corey motioned towards a little Fiat Panda, a small car about the size of a Mini Cooper. "Wait till you see the chick that gets in that car." "What, is she hot?" "Smoking hot." A few minutes later, he elbowed me. "There she is, bro. God damn." He wasn't lying. She was short and thin with long brown hair and black-rimmed Ray-Ban eyeglasses. Instead of walking back to her car, she walked directly over to us. "Hello. Do you guys need ride?" All three of us stared at her blankly. You need ride? She repeated. Yeah. I can give you ride, she said with a slight laugh at her awkwardness. You can? Oh, really? Corey finally figured out what was happening. Yes, it's no problem, if you can all fit. We hurriedly grabbed our things and followed her to the little car. We all squeezed into the Fiat with our packs on our laps and my guitar and Corey's foldable drum in the back hatch. This girl, who turned out to be only 19 years old, drove us for a couple hours and ended up buying us dinner at the next rest stop restaurant. A 60-franc dinner, I might add, which is about 55 U.S. dollars. It was getting dark when we said goodbye. We thanked her repeatedly for her generosity. We were at yet another gas station, not by our choosing, mind you. Corey and I played some chess. Aaron wrote in his journal. Then he and Corey played chess while I read a book. Then I played guitar. Before you knew it, it had become dark, and still no one had taken us up on the sign we had sitting in front of us holding the name of the next city. We're gonna have to sleep here, Corey stated the obvious. There was a brief and fruitless discussion about the logistics of doing so. There wasn't really anywhere to disappear and sleep. The entire area was fenced off on the highway side, and behind the rest stop was a steep drop-off into a swamp-like area. All we could find was a group of bushes directly next to the gas station. It would have to work. We laid our sleeping bags down and tied our packs to them just in case someone tried to grab them in the middle of the night. Words probably can't convey just how strange and sketchy this little spot was, but I'll attempt it. First of all, we were not hidden by any means. Anyone who looked towards the bushes would surely spot us. The back door to the gas station was only about 3 feet away from Aaron, and there was no cover between us and that door. The only cover was a couple of trees around us that didn't really do much. To one side of us was a road which led to the highway, and the other side was a road that paralleled the parking lot. Ahead of us was a connector between the two. We were essentially sleeping on a tiny grass peninsula between three heavily visited areas. Would we be robbed, arrested, fined? I was tired, though, and a group of trucks idling nearby made a perfect ambient noise. I slept like a baby. Unfortunately, that sleep didn't last long. I was woken up right before dawn, about 3 or 4 hours later, by Aaron. Hey, man, I think we should get up. There's people moving around and shit. He was right. There were cars starting to come and go in the little rest stop. If we were caught sleeping there, we were sure we'd be fined or worse. I woke up Corey and we gathered our gear. Aaron had been too worried to sleep at all. Corey was the king of sleeping anywhere. You could put that dude inside of a monster truck tire and drive it over a field of landmines, and he'd still be snoring inside of the motherfucker. I was getting quite good at it myself, but I would never reach his level of professional hobo napping. We ended up getting a ride in the afternoon with an older woman who took us to yet another gas station. We decided to take a lunch break. We actually lifted up some big rocks and found earthworms and then walked over to a nearby river. Aaron wanted to try to catch some fish with the line and hooks he'd brought. Corey and I cooked up some rice while he was doing that. After he'd declared the fishing unsuccessful and we'd eaten our rice, we headed back out to the highway and caught another ride from a woman and her adolescent kid, after a relatively short wait. They took us to the next big city where we grabbed some more food from a supermarket. When we headed back to the highway, we found ourselves in an interesting game of Frogger. Due to construction going on, the on-ramp we needed to get to was on the other side of the highway. This required us to shuffle with our packs and bags, guitar, cajon, through a narrow channel between two fences. Then we had to duck under a section of fence, come out on the other side directly in the middle of a single lane of traffic, and then quickly run to the other side. We took turns waiting for a space between cars, scurrying under the fence and onto the road, and then running across. Once we had all made it across safely, we set up shop along the on-ramp. I think we were in a particularly goofy mood, because this time we had headphones in and were dancing around like a bunch of idiots while we held up our signs. People were laughing their asses off and honking and waving as they passed. Two young women in a big SUV pulled up to the intersection and offered us a ride, which we gladly accepted. The girl driving had a flat-brim hat and gauged ears, dressing with a kind of scene fashion, and the other was a skinny black girl who dressed a little more traditionally. They both had some awesome tattoos. We rode with them into the Alps, where I thought the girl driving would kill us all. This girl was crazy. She was swerving in and out of traffic along the mountain roads without giving two shits or a fart about it. These roads were no joke either. If you drove off one of these things, you wouldn't be touching ground again for a few good minutes, and when you did, you'd be hating life. Or death. Because that's what it'd be. A gruesome, explosive death. She spoke little English, her native language is Italian, but the girl in the passenger seat spoke our language rather well. We talked to them about music and the history of the area we were passing through, as the driver was pointing out some of the oldest Roman ruins known to modern archaeology, an old bridge nestled into the mountainside. I wasn't aware until I visited the country, but three main languages are spoken in Switzerland: German in the north, French in the middle, and Italian in the south. To the best of my knowledge, there is no Swiss language, per se, although the accents of Swiss people certainly differ from their respective counterparts. Most of the people we met there could speak at least two of those languages, as well as English. I find it to be a testament to the superiority of the educational system in Europe compared to the United States. Apparently the driver noticed our fingers wrapped around the armrests like a boa constrictor on steroids. She say, "Don't worry about her driving. She knows these roads very well," the girl in the passenger seat translated. "Sure." I pulled my seatbelt tighter. Thankfully we survived, and they dropped us off in a small city called Bellinzona, Switzerland. We were getting close to the Italian border now, around 25 more miles or so. They told us if we hiked down and out of the city, we'd reach a little river, which should be perfect for camping. We said goodbye to them and started walking. It was quite the trek from where they dropped us off, several miles at least. It was a steep decline, and I couldn't help but think about how shitty the hike back up would be in the morning. Eventually, we reached the river and walked along its bank to look for a suitable campsite. It was all part of a park system, so there were walkways alongside of the waterway. This was actually not to our advantage, as we wanted somewhere less public and more concealed to set up our camp for the night. We noticed a bridge about 500 yards farther upstream leading over the river to the other side, which looked less populated. We kept walking towards it. A few hundred yards before the bridge, we were approached by a couple of guys on bicycles. "Hey, do you guys speak English?" one of them asked. "Yeah, man, we're American," Corey answered. "Where are you guys from?" "We're from Scotland," the guy answered. "That's funny. I figured you lot'd be speaking Italian or something. Hey, do you lads know of anywhere around here we can camp?" "That's exactly what we're trying to do," I answered. "I think we're going to head to that bridge and go on the other side of the river. It looks like there's some better spots over there." "All right, then," the other guy shook his head. "I think we're going to head further down that way and see if we can find anything," he continued, tilting his head towards the path we had just come down. "If we can't, maybe we'll head to that side and join you as well, then." "That's cool, brother." Corey shook their hands. "You guys take it easy, and good luck." With that, they waved goodbye and disappeared down the trail. We continued across the bridge and set up camp in a secluded, sandy spot along the riverbank. This river was absolutely beautiful. The color of its water was robin's egg blue in the middle and crystal clear along the banks. We took advantage of the cool river water to bathe after 4 days of strenuous, dirty travel. We also washed our clothes, using sand against large stones, and laid them out on the shore to dry before going to sleep. For the third night in a row, I slept really well, surprisingly. Slept in the next day, since even though my quality of sleep had been pretty good the last few days, the length of it had been severely lacking. I felt rejuvenated when I woke up. We hit the trail in the early afternoon and started heading back towards the area where we'd been dropped off at a day prior. It was a fucking hike. I mean, for real. It sucked. Which leads me to just go ahead and get out of the way what I should have said from the first chapter of this shitty narrative. I'm gonna bitch about walking, and I'm gonna bitch about it a lot, okay? I could sit here and act like some badass, like I can do all this shit without a care, and then I was in top physical condition, blah blah blah. It would all be a bold-faced lie. I was in terrible shape, and I hated every second of those goddamn walks. And this one was straight up a mountain, too. Do you think Aaron wanted any part of taking one of the numerous goddamn buses that drove up that shithole cliff face? Hell no. We walked up that son of a bitch. But here's the thing. I didn't bitch then. Not at that point, anyways. Like I said before, I just put one foot in front of the other. Bitching wasn't going to get me there any faster or easier. I had grown to realize that by this point. That's why it was frustrating to me that Aaron was starting to complain about it, when most of the time we were on these marches because he was too cheap to drop 2 or 3 euros for a bus fare. Fuck that. If we're going to do this shit, let's just do it. Shut your mouth and step, step, step. He did better about keeping up on this particular hike than the one out of Heidelberg, I'll give him that much, but goddamn, I don't remember Corey complaining more than once or twice during these hikes. He would eventually earn the name The Mule. We loaded that cajon bag with so much bullshit that it was surprising he could walk without leaning towards whichever side it hung on. But now that I'm home and telling this story from the comfort of my couch and my underwear, I'm gonna bitch about it. Why? Well, for one, because it's usually funnier if I do. Two, because I know that our morale isn't being negatively affected by it now. But mostly because, fuck you, this is my book, and if I want to spend it whining and crying about having to walk in Europe for 2 months, well then, I will. Anyway, we finally reached the top of this precipice, this Andes-esque peak of torturous hell, after 2 hours of blood, ass sweat, and ball tears. Was that good? Am I conveying this now? We posted up at a gas station where we once again made a visit to the super classy shitter to top off our water bottles with impeccably clean, tasty sink water. It didn't take us long to thumb a ride from this location, fortunately. The gas station was sitting at an intersection with a set of traffic lights leading directly to a highway on-ramp. A young woman pulled over to the side and flipped on her hazard lights. Another Fiat Panda. "Hello," she said with a big smile. "If you can fit, we got this. We rode in one yesterday," Corey interrupted as he jokingly threw up his hand. "Oh, good." She opened up the back hatch and a German Shepherd hopped out. Oh, shit. Well, that's a curveball. "Well, there wasn't a dog in the one that picked us up last time," I offered. "We got this." Corey's optimism never failed. I was concernedly more cramped than last time. I had to have my pack and guitar between my legs and on my lap, which required Aaron to shut my door for me since I couldn't reach the handle. The poor dog was holed up in the back hatch along with the cajon drum. This woman spoke great English and was a native Italian speaker. I took the opportunity to learn my first bit of Italian, which was, ironically, how do you ask someone if they speak English? "Ah, it is parli inglese?" I repeated the phrase in my best Italian accent, and she laughed at me. "I'm sorry, you spoke very well, but you sound like an Italian man from far in the south of Italy. It's just funny." We told her of our plans to continue hitchhiking all the way to Rome, but she was skeptical. "I don't think you will have much luck from Lugano, where I'm taking you. You'll be much better taking a train from there. People, they will not want to drive you." We had heard this kind of stuff before, about not being able to catch rides, but we entertained the idea by agreeing to at least price check some train tickets. She agreed to drive us to the train station. I learned some more Italian as she drove us out of the mountains and into the town of Lugano, seated along the southern Swiss border. There, she helped us unload our gear, much to her pup's satisfaction. He posed with her alongside us for a picture, and then she left him with Corey and me while she headed into the train station with Aaron to ask about train tickets. Corey started giving the dog commands. "Sit. Sit, boy. The dog stood there, panting and staring blankly. I don't think he speaks English, I realized. Shit. Didn't even think of that. Sito, boy. Whatever the Italian word for sit is, do it. The dog continued to stare at him blankly. Thought German shepherds were supposed to be smart and shit. Aaron and our driver eventually walked back out of the train station with tickets, which surprised me. I figured there was no way in hell Aaron would buy them, regardless of the cost. I don't remember the price exactly, but it turns out that they were pretty cheap. These tickets would take us to Milan, and from there we could either start hitching again or buy another train ride. We thanked the young woman for all of her help, and she loaded the dog into the car and drove off. We still had an hour or so before the train left, so we decided to have a Nutella sandwich. I glanced up as I was being handed a slice of bread to see two guys on bicycles. Holy shit. Hey, guys! One of them called out. It was the same guys on the bikes from the day before. Corey looked up from his sandwich. How in the hell... These guys had to have covered some serious ground in a short amount of time. And what are the odds, seriously, that they ended up riding their bikes all the way to that same train station in the same town at the same time as us? It was just crazy. How did you guys make it here? I asked, astonished. Eh, one of them answered with a grin. We cover about 40 or 50 kilometers a day on the bikes. We talked with them for a while about their travels. Their names were Sam and Anderson. Sam was a taller, dark-haired guy, and Anderson was shorter, with red hair. They had been riding their bikes all the way from the UK, carrying over 60 pounds in gear and saddlebags attached to the bicycles. How long did it take you guys to train for this trip? Aaron asked. Anderson answered. Well, e-bikes a lot, but I've never done this shit before. He just asked if I wanted to bike around Europe with him this summer, and I said... Sure, why the fuck not? My jaw dropped. You seriously never trained for this? Not really. If I carried 30 kilos of shit on a goddamn bicycle through the Alps, my parents would be heading to the airport to pick up my dead body right now. Yeah, it got crazy up there, man, Sam concurred. It took us 12 hours to get up the one side and 20 minutes to get down the other. We were going so fast we were passing cars on the way down. With 60 pounds of gear. I would have left a slippery poop stream behind me as I shit my pants the whole way down that mountain. We shared our Nutella and bread with the two of them and then snapped a group picture. As with most of the people we met, I got their information and added them on Facebook. I'm sure if I ever make it to Edinburgh, I'll be partying with them. The hour passed quickly, and before long we were saying goodbye to our new friends and hurrying into the train station. Alas, thus is the nature of travel. Once in the train station, we were having some trouble finding our platform. When time began to run out, Corey finally asked a police officer near the tracks if he could direct us. We had about 5 minutes before our train was scheduled to depart. This was their conversation. Excuse me, officer, can you show me which train... You have drugs? What? No, I just need to find... Do you have drugs? No, I don't have drugs. I need to find my train. If you could just... Do you have your passport? Yes, I have my passport. Listen, we're really late, sir. I just need... Come with me. The officer grabbed Corey by the arm and led him to a back room. Aaron and I watched from a few yards away with our jaws dropped. Well, Corey's arrested, I said plainly. What the fuck? Aaron stared confusedly. Corey emerged after a few moments and ran back over to us. Jesus Christ, that was ridiculous. Dude was asking me if I've ever done drugs and shit, just like in Germany. I guess our platform's over here, he explained as we started walking. As I followed him to our train, I felt relieved that we were finally about to have a solid ride without having to worry. Maybe hitchhiking was over. I enjoyed meeting all the crazy, awesome, and interesting people, but I was certainly ready for something a little more stable and relaxed. Still, though, I can't say I didn't enjoy the experience itself. The generous and selfless things that people did for us during that time never once ceased to amaze me. People driving out of their way to take us further, buying or giving us food, putting us up in their houses, giving us beer, all of it. It was a divinely humbling experience, and I felt like I'd gained a whole new outlook on humanity and life in general for the umpteenth time on our journey so far. I had feelings of ambiguity about not hitchhiking anymore, if that turned out to be the case. But either way, I was definitely happy about one thing. We were finally making it to Italy, and we would hopefully be making it to Thailand, and subsequently going from peasants to kings in a very short period of time. End of chapter 13. Chapter 14. Train Hopping Hobos. Milano to Deva Marina, Italy. I see my path, but I don't know where it leads. Not knowing where I'm going is what inspires me to travel it. Rosalia de Castro. July 27th. Our journey in Italy got off to a rough start. The train we hopped on out of Lugano literally broke down in the middle of the tracks. One minute we were moving, the next we were learning the local swear words as people shouted at no one in particular. I spent most of this time asking everyone around me if they spoke English in order to try to figure out what was going on, but getting nothing but head shakes no in return. We sat there for something like 30 minutes and never did find out exactly what was going on. Although I didn't know it at the time, I learned two valuable lessons about Italy right from the start. One, nothing runs on time, or is even guaranteed to run at all for that matter. Two, it gets hot. Very hot. Once we arrived at the station in Milan, our situation didn't get any better. Apparently, due to the first train's holdup, we had missed our connecting train to Genova. We had to wait for the next one, which was conveniently 4 hours later. The only plus side was that this train station had Wi-Fi. I hadn't been able to contact anyone at home since we'd left Heidelberg some 5 days prior, so I used this time to let all my friends and family know that I wasn't dead or anything. Our second train ride was uneventful. We arrived in Genova hoping for good luck, but were left disappointed. It seemed like we couldn't catch a damn break when it came to shit like this. I was starting to think we were cursed somehow. We walked out of the train station and discovered that Genova is a relatively large city, at least in terms of finding a place to sleep undisturbed. We walked around for a while hoping to find a cheap hostel or hotel, but we had no luck on that front either. It was getting late and we were all hungry, so we had a seat on the grass in the middle of a tiny park next to the train station and cooked up some rice. There were homeless people everywhere. It seemed like the police didn't care either. The vagrants were sleeping wherever they wanted, essentially. Probably a good sign for us. Eventually, we managed to pick up a Wi-Fi signal in this park and used it to try to locate somewhere to sleep. It didn't look promising. There was no way we were going to be able to make it out of the city. It was late by then, around 1 a.m., and all the trains had stopped for the night. We had two options. Either sleep somewhere on the street or shell out the money for a hotel. All three of us agreed that the hotels around the area were way too expensive, so we opted for the street. Or, more specifically, the train station. That's where all the bums were sleeping, so we figured we were allowed to sleep there as well. We walked into the station, all the way to the furthest terminal and around some benches. There were a lot of rough characters around us. Tons of homeless people were sleeping there, and they didn't look like a friendly bunch. In fact, we were just setting our bags down on some benches when we were approached by a couple of English-speaking police officers. "Hey, guys," one of them said, "you should be very careful, okay? These are very dangerous people, and they will steal from you if you are not careful. So you watch your bags very close, okay?" "Definitely. Thank you, sir," Corey answered. The cop nodded his head and walked the other way. At least the police in Italy seemed much friendlier than Germany's Gestapo force. We were more sketched out now, though. "I'll watch the stuff if you guys want to sleep," Aaron offered. "We can take turns, man," I replied. "I'm not going to be able to sleep with these guys around anyway." I didn't think any of us were going to be able to sleep for that matter. We walked over to the train schedule and inspected it. The next train was set to depart at 5 a.m. By that time, it was 2 a.m., so that gave us 3 hours to sleep, and then we could get out of here. The plan was to take the 5 a.m. train out of Geneva and head farther south where we could hopefully find somewhere to set up hammocks and get at least one good night's sleep, since it was pretty apparent that we were about to be up all night. There was one small addition to this plan that changed the course of our travel in Italy from then on out. I brought it up when we were discussing the aforementioned train. You know, I noticed that no one checked our tickets on either of those trains. I feel like we could just hop on this thing tomorrow, and I bet they wouldn't even check. Yeah, I noticed that too, Corey agreed. Pretty sure we could just hop on whatever train we want and go anywhere. Yeah, but what if we get caught? Aaron posited. I don't think we will. I mean, if we do, fuck it. We could talk our way out of it, I think. I don't know. I think we should just buy the tickets, man. Aaron was skeptical. I don't think it's a good idea. Listen, man, you're always bitching about money, so here's your chance to save a good bit of it. I guarantee they aren't gonna check shit. They didn't once ask on any of the trains we've taken in Italy so far. After a short debate, Corey and I finally talked Aaron into giving it a try. All that was left to do now was try and get some sleep. I laid out my sleeping bag on one side of a concrete bench. Each bench had two sides separated by a backrest in the middle. Corey was situated on one bench farther down, and Aaron was on the other side of mine. Ours were the only benches that had been left available after the local homeless had had their pick. We should put all our bags together by me, Aaron said. I can watch them while you guys sleep. Yeah, that's a good idea, Corey agreed. He grabbed his bag and brought it over to our bench where he started to dig through it for his sleeping bag. About this time, a really sketchy-looking guy in a tattered black t-shirt and baggy jeans walked past us. He glared at us with crazy eyes and then walked over to the bench Corey had planned on sleeping on. He looked back toward us and then plopped right down on it. Corey looked up at me. Is this guy fucking serious? We couldn't help but laugh. You can have my side here, Corey, Aaron offered. I'm not going to be sleeping anyway, so I don't care. Corey accepted. The guy that had taken his bench was laying there staring at us. We started intentionally speaking very loudly. Hey, Aaron, do you have your knife by you? The big one? Yep, I'm going to keep it right here next to me. Do you have your knife? Sure do. Going to put it right here by my hand so it's ready. Corey, do you have your knife? Yep, going to go ahead and get it out of the sheath so it's ready to stab a motherfucker, just in case. By the end of this conversation, the shady dude surely understood, if he spoke English anyway, that he was going to get stabbed right in the face if he came near us or our shit. On second thought, I don't think he needed to understand English. We were waving knives around like goddamn pirates while we were having that conversation. I don't think I slept more than an hour between the time I finally laid down and when I awoke to pack up and leave. I felt absolutely deplorable when Aaron roused us at 4:30 a.m. I was insatiably hungry. I was tired. I was angry. I wanted to be in a bed. One with a pillow-top mattress, not concrete and chewed-up bubblegum. We walked over to our designated terminal and sat our bags down. I smoked my third cigarette in a half hour while I drew pictures of food in my journal. Pizza, hot dogs, hamburgers, everything. All we had left was some rice, which we didn't have time to cook, and a tiny bit of Nutella and bread, which we needed to save if we wanted to have anything to eat for lunch. I hated that feeling of hunger when I knew we had money with which we could have bought food. Aaron would have thrown a fit if I'd wanted to go buy breakfast somewhere, though. I didn't even ask. 5 a.m. rolled around, and our train still hadn't shown up. Where the hell is this thing? Aaron wondered aloud. Who fucking cares? I mumbled. I want to die. Corey went over and looked at a big board containing the train schedules. What the hell were we looking at last night? This train doesn't even run today. Huh? Aaron walked over in confusion. Kill me, I whispered as I sank down against the dirty wall next to the tracks, My head throbbed. Today is Sunday. The next train doesn't come for, like, another hour. Oh, fuck me. I sighed. When the train finally did show up an hour later, we boarded it with no problems. No one asked for a ticket, just as Corey and I had hoped. The plan was to get off at a little town called Deva Marina, which is situated along the northwestern coast of Italy. On Google Maps, it had shown what looked like plenty of suitable camping areas, plenty of trees and grass for cover. We weren't really sure which stop we were supposed to take, as there wasn't any kind of screen or sign with the stop schedule like there normally are on European trains. We simply looked out the window and read the signs at each stop. I have to say, as exhausted as I was, the view out the window of that train lifted my spirits. It was gorgeous beyond measure. Here was the true Italian coastline, right at arm's length. Rocky cliff sides falling into choppy blue Mediterranean waters, sparkling in the early morning sun. Among the rocky cliffscape were little towns and villages, tiny cottages thrown on a ridge here or a hillside there, and little honeycomb communities of stucco or brick buildings which seemed almost naturally implanted into the seaside coves. What was the downside to all of this alluring scenery? I didn't see a single tree anywhere. There were plenty of bushes, no shortage of that, but nowhere that looked suitable to set up a hidden campsite. I hoped our spot would be different. Aaron was supposed to be looking out for our stop, so I pulled out a book I had been carrying in my backpack since we'd left home. I have a thing for true adventure novels, usually stuff about the heroes of the great age of exploration in the early 1900s. Percy Fawcett, who explored much of the Amazon region. Stanley and Livingstone with their amazing story of African exploration and rescue from the wilderness. But I was most fascinated with the polar expeditions of the early 20th century. Robert Falcon Scott, Robert Bartlett, Scott Amundsen, the guys who braved temperatures of negative 60 degrees Fahrenheit, traveling by foot or on dog sled across hundreds of miles of endless snow, ice, and rock, amongst deadly crevasses or breaking ice floes and sea leopards who quite literally tried to eat them on the south side of the globe. It fascinated me. The book I was reading was about Douglas Mawson. He was an Antarctic explorer, much forgotten to history in the shadow of the famous ill-fated journey to the South Pole by Robert Falcon Scott, which occurred during the exact same time. Scott and his two companions were on their way back from the pole, having been beaten there by the Norwegian Amundsen by just 34 days. They were soon to perish famously of starvation a mere 3 miles from their next supply depot. Meanwhile, Mawson and two companions were on dog sleds a few hundred miles away. They were on a scientific mission to collect geological samples from an Antarctic mountain range. The area Mawson and his team were in was quickly found to be home to the most severe blizzards on the planet, unbeknownst to anyone prior to his arrival. He had a very limited amount of time to make it to the intended mountain range and then back to base camp before he would not only run out of food, but be left behind for another year until the ship could return. There was only a short window of time in which ships could safely navigate the ice into the bay. Mawson sadly ended up losing both of his companions, one who fell into a seemingly bottomless crevasse along with most of the dogs and food supplies, and the other who died of a strange form of malnourishment, later found to be caused from eating the livers of the sled dogs as they had died off on the journey. He had gone, quote, terribly mad as a result of this particular affliction and ended up spending his last days on Earth in a delirium inside the tent while Mawson watched on helplessly. It was an unfathomably hard decision for Mawson to remain there and help his friend, whom he was certain would die soon. They were already so low on food after losing most of it to the crevasse that there was no realistic way that they would be able to make it back to the ship before starving to death. Every day spent at his friend's bedside was lessening his already dismal odds of survival. But Mawson stayed with him until the end, and afterwards pushed on alone. Once all of the dogs had perished, he even carried the sled himself with the remainder of the supplies. He eventually became so malnourished due to a lack of food that his skin literally started to fall off. The heels of his feet completely separated all the way down to the bone, and he had to tie them on with scraps of cloth from his jacket. He was certain he would die before making it back to the ship. He wrote a passage in his journal, which I happened to read during this particular train ride, and which filled me with much-needed gusto. I wrote it along with the following paragraph written by the author in my own journal. It was a means to remind myself just how much of a pussy I was being compared to the huge stainless steel testicles that Mawson had been dragging around between his legs on the Antarctic ice. From Mawson's Will. Mawson scribbled in his journal, "Buck up. Do your damnedest and fight. It's the plugging away that will win you the day." It rose in his consciousness like a call. It lifted him from despondency and was a challenge to his character, to attain some farther westward point, to get beyond Aurora Peak where his body and their records might be found to tell the tale of his comrades and himself. For his wife Paquita, for the search parties he was sure would be sent out to find him while the ship waited to sail west to relieve Frank Wilde and his group. His love, his men, his ship and the expedition. He owed them all a duty. I found it awe-inspiring. The craziest part of the whole story is that this brass-balled fucker actually made it. He walked the whole way back, at one point missing a search party by a mere 3 hours. They'd left a cache with the food and supplies that they knew he'd desperately need if he was still alive. He then walked, or more accurately, crawled and dragged the sled, another few days to make it back to the cove. Then he got there and walked over the ridge above camp, just in time to see the ship sailing off in the distance. Isn't that some shit luck? I mean, seriously. How pissed would you be if you made it that far? We're talking hundreds of miles here. Almost dying in the slowest way possible every fucking day, just to see that you missed your ship by a few hours, and then you're stuck there for another year. That's just unbe-fucking-leavable. Luckily, a few of his teammates at the base camp had opted to stay there for another year just in case he made it back. Can you believe that? Sure, I'll wait on this blizzard-infested wasteland of cold, shitty hell for another year, just in case the boss shows back up. You'd be buying those guys a lot of beers when you got back home. Anyway, back to my pathetic little story. Aaron must have zoned out as well, because at one point he kind of just looked up, stared outside for a minute, and then said, "I think we missed our stop." "Sounds like our luck," Corey muttered. "We'll have to get off at the next stop and then head back in the other direction. I think it was just one or two stops back," Aaron told us. We hopped off the train at the next stop and decided to look around for a place to sleep there. There was no particular reason we had been heading to the other town. It had simply looked like the most suitable place to find a camping spot when we looked at the map. If we could find somewhere here instead, all the better. We walked around for a short amount of time, only about 20 minutes or so, before realizing that we were not in luck. The whole town was situated on a steep cliffside with buildings and rows packed densely among it. We headed back up the steep incline towards the train station. We decided that we should eat something before we hopped back on the train. Finally. We finished off the rest of the Nutella along with some stale bread. I had become slap happy at this point. My mood was improved drastically by finally getting some food in my belly. Aaron, on the other hand, was in a seriously shitty mood. The lack of sleep was really getting to him. I'm sure it didn't help that he hadn't slept at all while Corey and I had at least gotten an hour or so shut-eye. He became irritated when Corey and I started dipping our fingers in the Nutella jar to get as much of its delicious goodness out as possible before throwing the jar away. Now, granted, I had been a total smartass and sarcastically asked him permission since he had thrown such a huge fit about us eating directly out of the jar back in Germany. The final straw was when Corey came up with the idea of filling the almost empty Nutella jar with water, then shaking it up to try and make a chocolate drink of some kind.
fucking brilliant, I commented. I know, right? I'm a goddamn genius.
Are you done playing around so we can get moving? Aaron snapped from behind us.
Just chill, man. We're almost done, I said back to him.
Well, I'm going back to the train station. I guess I'll see you guys there.
Whatever, Corey said.